Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Doing a natural disaster and economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay. For more details, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, everybody, we've just launched our new website. It's www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. You can click on the navigational links up top. There's the home link, the services link, the donation page link is there as well. When you get ready to own your own business, for those of you who own your own business or want to own your own business, there's a link available up top for that. Also, all of the previous audios that we've done on our wealth building classes, so click on the wealth building class link for all your previous audio. You can go in anytime you get ready. And as we go along, we'll add our new audio plugs under that title, the wealth building class link. Okay, www.newdebtelimination.com. Well, just what is it that New Debt Elimination do? What are they all about? Well, to get all the information on New Debt Elimination, go to www.newdebtelimination.net. That's newdebtelimination.net. Learn all about what we do right there. All the information in regard to us and what we do involving our natural food production, growing organic food and herbs and spices, and teaching of contract law, and many other things are described for you in detail at www.newdebtelimination.net. Welcome, Morris. Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amanuel Bay. And this evening, we're going to be dealing with some very, very good information to help people in dealing with their contracts in police and law. Tonight's broadcast is entitled Contracts, Commerce, Police, Law, and Nationality. We're going to touch on that tonight as well. We will be dealing with the following questions. What is the best way to handle police stops? What do you do with a ticket?
How do you stay out of court? What part does nationality play in police stops? What part does commerce play in law enforcement? What is nationality versus law? These are the questions that we're going to deal with here this evening. The reason I want to deal with this is because I've been getting a lot of feedback from people, and it seems that we just haven't quite gotten this thing down to a science. So we're going to deal with stops and stuff of this nature. First thing you got to understand is we want to get certain things firmly fixed in our head first. Before we go to hollering about, well, I need some paperwork to do something. let's get something firmly fixed in the brain first, because this is where all the power is. You know, we keep trying to look at doing some documents and then standing back and waiting for something to happen. No, you have to think too. And for some people, I guess that might be a little bit rough. But this is what we're going to have to do. Whatever contracts you do formulate or whatever paperwork you do got, you still got to enforce it. So it stands to reason that the first thing you want to do is you want to learn. You want to have it in your brain, okay? So let's go over police stop. First of all, step one, no evidence, no case. We're talking to you. If you don't have any evidence, you don't have no case. So what we got to do? We got to get evidence. We know these guys are out there. We know they're not officers of the law. These guys are private contractors enforcing public policy, which is masquerading as law. That's already been out there. That's out there. We know this here. So therefore, we don't have to argue with anybody. Okay? All right? Now, we want to get you little devices and stuff and capture the interview between us and them guys. You need you want to get the name of the private contractor that's stopping you. You want to get his card number, tag number, all this right here, so that we can clearly identify somebody. Because if a man is coming to you and he's asking you to identify yourself, then he should be willing to identify himself. Otherwise, he is concealing his identity, which is not right. Okay, that ain't right. Okay, we don't want to argue about it. We don't want to argue about it. There's nothing under the sun that you can tell me about a man that coming to me and asking me for identification and unwilling to give me identification on him. I don't have anything else to go on but race. That's all I have to go on. That's it. If a gentleman come to me and I'm looking at him, I know he's of Asian descent or he's of Caucasian descent, and he's asking me for identification, and I'm not willing to. I'm willing to give him identification, but I'm requiring that we have an even exchange, and he's not willing to give me his identification. There's nothing left for me to go on but race. That's it. So we want to keep that in mind first. We keep in mind that there should never be any debate with these people out there. These guys are out there, and they are acting in commerce. You didn't cut on your blinker, you owe me some money. You didn't signal to turn right, you owe me money. Your tag might not appear to be quite right, you owe me money. You didn't come to a complete stop, you owe me money. Now, let's look at what the Supreme Court judges has to say about this. You were speeding, you owe me money. The Supreme Court says that speeding is not a ticketable or an arrestable offense. Okay, that's we put that on the side over there. Traveling is a right that you have, according to all the Supreme Court justices. How's courts in the land say you have a right to travel? So you don't need permission from anybody to do that. you have an automobile. An automobile and a car and a vehicle is different. You got an automobile, okay, that's the internet. Because the vehicle, or conveyance, or car, has to weigh a certain amount, it has to have so many doors, it has to have all this according to rules and regulations and guidelines. So if you're driving a Maxima, if you're driving a SUV, if you're driving something, you know, the vehicle weighs a certain amount of pounds. Okay, so that takes you out of that category. Okay, if you're driving to the store, you're picking up something, you're traveling. You the only person that needs a driver's license or permission to do something they don't have a right to do in commerce, within commerce, they need a license. Okay, then we haven't gotten all down into that to find it, because I can't see how that's legal either. But if you are not, then you don't need anybody's permission to travel. But you don't want to argue with anybody. You want to make sure that you accumulate the evidence and you're able to present the evidence in your case. And they can say that, well, this is, you know, even though we're looking at this, we see where we violated you, we're going to have to continue to break the law. Okay, now we have criminal offenses. We can go ahead and start filing the proper lawsuits and placing liens and filing the lawsuits against people who are accessories after the fact, which in most cases are a wife or a spouse or a husband. And we can go on and just do this here and just follow the law, because after all, they are presenting themselves as law enforcement. And I'm trying to figure out how could you have law when you're operating as a corporation. You filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 1933. You issued House Joint Resolution 192 in 1933, giving people signature. I'm trying to find out where is the law inside the United States? Where is it, if somebody can tell me that? Now, the lines are open. If you got questions and comments, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the line so that you can get in and you can let me know what's on your mind. Okay, what you got going? I need to know that. So we're going to open up the lines right now, and you can let me know what's going on. Okay? Now, we're going to deal with this license and things a little bit differently. We'll go a little bit further. When it comes to your documentation and dealing with this thing, we want to be precise. We want to need somebody to address this thing to. We want to make sure that it is in the form of an affidavit, and we want to send this to them, okay, so that they can explain to us and point out to us where. Who knows? I may have made a mistake. I may have been traveling, and there may have been a law passed someplace indicating to me that I needed a driver's license. I don't know. I need you to point out to me where and when I needed to do that. Just show me the law. I think it's fair. I mean, if you are accusing me of something, okay, then you have to perform to show me where I have violated the law. We're not talking about public policy that's masquerading as law. We're talking about the law. What is on the books as far as law is concerned? Can we look at the law? Okay?
Now, bring on our guest speaker, Brother Taj Tariq Bey. Brother Taj, I met Brother Taj 10 years ago. He and I have been working together since then. Today's lecture is titled, Driver's License Identification Fraud. Right now, I bring you, as you all know, Brother Taj Tariq Bey.
Islam, Moors. Most of Moors, most of you are already familiar, but those who are not, take a pencil and pen and take some notes. Because we're here today to assist in solving some problems. And one of the problems is the misconception of what a driver's license is and what it's used for. The fraud of a driver's license is not in your interest. When they gave you that driver's license, it was to incorporate you as a corporate person, was not an instrument for identification. Is everyone aware of that? You aware of that? Everyone aware of that? What we have to do as free Moors is begin a process and a consciousness amongst the people to neutralize that instrument. Some of us use it now because of whatever purposes, to transport, etc., but understand that it's a commercial instrument. It is not your identification, your pedigree, bloodline, anything like that. And you'll notice that all driver's licenses have it, the nomen written in all capital letters, which you all know, which indicates a corporation, an artificial person, an instrument, all right? Now, that instrument comes under excise tax. An excise tax is a system that is set up for corporate activity and for taxing corporations in the capacity of having a privilege or benefit of operating in a corporate capacity, i.e. dealing with mercantile instruments or products of merchandise, sales, etc., and the movement of those things. Now, one thing that you must recognize, and I know you do recognize, are you that? Is anyone a movable instrument? Something, did somebody manufacture you? Are you a living, breathing being, thinking being? Well, what the driver's license does, it identifies or tags moving property. And you must understand that. And the reason I'm telling you these things, and the reason we're doing this particular lecture, is because if that's not addressed by the people on a serious matter, it will be used, as it has been used, to profile you, to extract revenues from you as chattel property. And most people are under the impression that slavery in the Union State Society had ended. Well, the driver's license is one of the major instruments that is used politically to sustain slavery. The principle is dealing with electricity, that the element of electricity, and the element of water. And water promotes life. And all things in this particular atmosphere needs water to live. And all things are electrical. All things are electrical. They have a certain amount of electrical current going through them. And the principle of currency is based in that, what they call money. And when you look at money, you look at the energy of the three major planets in our solar system, the sun, the moon, the stars, as you see in the Bible, the Quran, Waspi, ancient Sanskrit text, it always says, I leave these signs for you, the sun, the moon, the stars. This is the center of your universe. This is the center of civilization. You look at the economies of the moon, which governs the womb of woman who brings all of us here. You look at the moon revolving around the earth 13 times a year, and the earth revolving around the sun 12 times a year. The energy that relates to these three spheres causes the seasons, it causes the winds, it causes the tides, and it causes your heart to beat in cosmic rhythm, and it causes woman to bring us here. All these effects are there. And in the symbology, you deal with the earth, or you take the E of the earth, and you take the energy of the moon, and you take the moon, and you put E on it. And that is, that interaction of that energy is what money is. The alchemical metal for the moon is silver. And the alchemical metal for the sun is gold, which is why the monetary system in civilization has always been based on the moon and the sun. or the crescent and the star. And so your four-quarter moons make up your 100% or your 360-degree dollar, or the whole. It's broken down in four-quarter moons with four silver quarters that represent that moral and ethical principle that the dollar is based on, and it's ancient, it's not modern. Our violations of those divine principles cause our fall. Isonomy is the principle of equal rights and service to all the citizens in society. By us violating those laws, we fell. The Europeans took our science, our mathematics, our master astrology, and ruled the world. We took on his idol god religions and fell. That's what your problem is. It's not emotional. It's not racism. It's scientific. So you must understand the instruments that are used to maintain the enslavement, because the slave can't be maintained because it's against nature. So the slave must be invited to participate in that construct. A license is an agreement construct for you to stop your waters. Now, from a scientific perspective, if you're going to kill a river and some people live below the flow of the water and you want to take their land, what is one of the things that you do politically in order to stagnate their development and growth? You build a dam, don't you? And you start regulating the water, right? And when you regulate the water that flows free produces fish, feeds the wildlife, nourishes the land, moves the sediment according to the moon to keep nutrients going to the land. When you stagnate it, then you get mosquitoes, leeches, and everything, and the water gets black, doesn't it? And you call it death, don't you? And you can talk that person into selling that land for a little bit of finance, or you can starve them out, can't you? It's called movement. So water that stagnates is called dead water, isn't it? But water that flows is called living water, isn't it? The license is based on that. It is to stagnate your flow. If you can stagnate the flow of a people, you can stagnate their economy. And if you can stagnate their economy, you can stagnate their life. If you stagnate their life, you control their family with just that instrument, and you stand back and just reap in the benefits. That's what the license is for. If you didn't know it now. You need to examine it for what it is. Now, anyone who has a license, pull it out your pocket right now. Let's examine it. Any instrument that they've given you that they've called a license. Psalm says. Now look on the front of it. And it has a picture that represents you. Correct? And then it has some phonetic writing on the front that sounds like the name that you have, but that's not you. The picture can't represent you, and the name does not represent you. That name represents a private corporation, or what they call often a straw man, too. You notice that grammatically it's incorrect, correct? Why is it incorrect? What did you learn? Let's look at this, and feel free to speak up, too. What did you learn in third grade grammar? You capitalize nouns, correct? If you don't capitalize a noun, then it must not be a noun, am I correct? But if all letters are capitalized, it's not a proper noun, is it? It's grammatically incorrect if it's directed at a person, correct? Why do you think that was done? Do you think it's accidental? What occurs, you had that and you don't object?
You agree to it.
You agree, you waved, didn't you? And when you wave, you assume that that's you, don't you? And even when they write letters to you in response where they're suing you, and tickets are suits, if you didn't know that now. If you get a ticket on that instrument, it's a suit, they're suing you. And they're suing you for breach of contract. Are you aware of that? All right. And a summons is not a warrant, but it's treated accordingly, isn't it? Because it's chattel property. Do you understand that? Now, what I want you to be thinking about right now.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Before we go to the next part, we have a caller with his hand raised at area code 813. We're going to open up the line and see what the question is. Area code 813. Islam. Islam, Mo, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just hollering. I'm calling about the driver license myself.
Okay.
The license itself, once looked it up, all dictionaries, they'll tell you to see servitude. You know, it's the same as definition as servitude. And then
right.
Also as well as the our rights to travel has been upheld within the most state statutes, indicating that we're operating on the roads temporarily using an implement of husbandry. They're trying to use wordplay to disguise our rights to travel, indicating calling the automobile an implement of husbandry.
Mm-hmm.
And that implement of husbandry, once you look up within your state statutes, it'll indicate that you do not need a license. It'll indicate a license is not required for you operating any road machine or temporary or implement of husbandry, temporary use on the highway. Because you got to understand, we're not permanently using our automobiles on this highway, you know, as if we're, you know, commercial motor vehicles or commercial truck drivers or so. And also, once you look up the definition of implement of husbandry in your state statutes, it'll disguise to you that we don't need a, we do not require registration as well. So both of those implement of husbandry was required to the driver's license and the registration. It'll tell you it's not required in your state statutes if you look into it a little deeper.
Okay. Now, what about insurance on the vehicle?
Insurance is normally an issue once you're trying to get it registered. So insurance is your choice. That's still a voluntary thing. If you want to insure your property, then that's your choice. But the insurance only becomes an issue once you're trying to get a registration, because insurance is required for any business or doing any company or corporation or doing business. So you would need that insurance to register that vehicle or motor vehicle, indicating that you're dealing in commerce and you're not using it for private use, indicating it's not for hire.
Okay. That's some very good work you've done there, soldier. Been trying to keep this thing from every conceivable angle and make sure people understand that. So now we have this breakdown that the brother just gave us. What's your name again, brother?
I'm Rashid.
Rashid. Okay, Rashid, I appreciate you dropping that bit of information on us, and you're absolutely correct. Good work, brother. Good work.
No doubt, brother. Peace.
Peace. All right, Mo. Let's go over here to 786. Area code 786. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, which question.
Peace and honor, brother. This is El Malik L. Day out of Dade County, Florida country.
All right, brother.
I'm dealing with my UCC. I'm getting stamped and sealed and getting ready to go. And in particular, I'm dealing with the birth bond. And it was simple on the birth bond in terms of the exemption or the social. And it was like five digits that was done. And what I need to find out is to how appropriately make the corrections on this bonded paper. What is appropriate? Do we use wipe out, or how can we deal with this so it won't be a mess?
What are you trying to do with the birth certificate?
No, this is the birth certificate bond I'm dealing with on bonded paper.
Okay, but what's your overall objective of what I'm asking you?
Okay, well, I'm gathering three sureties. So as I was guaranteed a surety, we just made a simple mistake on the birth bond as far as their information. And I just need to know.
What I'm trying to find out from you is why are you doing what you're doing?
Oh, because I want to go ahead and take control of the straw. in terms of the exemption account and all the other stuff that entails the UCC package, the financial statement, where you can take control of the, you know, the exemption account and, you know, take control of your finances. So you can possibly, well, actually open up your trust, direct account. This is the purpose of doing all this.
All right. So did you contact the Internal Revenue Service and get them to issue you an EIN number?
Oh, no. This is not dealing with the EIN number. This is the whole package, the UCC financial statement set. I have a package here that I'm going to send in. Everything has been stamped, sealed, notarized, and everything. I'm just trying to find out dealing with this, how it's appropriate that if I'm going to make some corrections on here, just a little mistake, what would be appropriate?
Let me ask you this. Are you trying to do this as a more, or what are you trying to do?
Exactly. I'm trying to do this as a more.
Uh-huh. Okay. And you're dealing with the United States of American Commerce.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, me personally, I don't put that more into commerce. I put that with my government, according to the teachings of the prophet. And I don't usually deal with the UCC one at all. What I deal with is contract law, straight up.
Okay.
And so as far as that, the only thing that I could recommend you do if you're going to go that route is to reexamine your documentation. Look at the employee identification number, the EIN number, and you might want to check with thctrust.org and look inside your trust manuals, because there may be some things that you may be doing that you may not even need to do, because there's only a public side and a private side. You want to operate on the private. You might want to reexamine it. I don't deal with the UCC one.
Yeah, this is entails the private side. It's dealing with my 60K trust, and you know, the EIN will be eventually pursued, particularly the 98 series, which will put us into the private. But anyway, I was just trying to get a simple suggestion of, I don't want to what's the professionally properly way to put, should I put whiteout on a bond in order to send this in so it will be accepted? I just don't want to make a mistake.
No, you can't white out no bond of paper, man.
That's my point.
No white out, not even a letter or an affidavit. You don't ever want to use any white out anywhere. You might want to redo the document, but make sure you have everything correct on it.
That's my point. Okay, that's what I was trying to get after. You just made good sense. Okay, that's end of question. Islam?
Islamo. All right, let's go down here. 706
706. Hi, good evening, Brother Taharka. This is Scott. Had a comment and a question. I did my UCC one also, and I heard you say that you don't deal with it. I did the chargeback with my birth certificate to the Treasury Department. Do you recommend doing that? I did mine already.
Okay, were you successful at doing that?
It's hard to tell. I mean, they're not gonna contact you and tell you really if you did anything wrong or anything. That's something they just don't do.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have a tax bill from 2009, and I did the money order on the presentment and on the envelope. And they sent me my first notice last month. Says thank you for your This one says thank you for your correspondence. This is from the IRS. See, blah blah blah. We haven't resolved this matter because we haven't completed all the research necessary for a complete response. We will contact you again within 45 days. Blah blah blah. I got another letter from them about a week later. Dear taxpayer, thank you for your correspondence received, blah, blah, blah. We have received your information and determined no action was necessary on your account. What do you think?
All right. So did you get what you wanted?
They're not asking for the money anymore. That's all I know.
Okay.
It was
how much did they previously say you owed them?
$1,700.
Okay, and they and so now they haven't seen you anything else asking for money.
Nope. They said we have received your information and determined no action is necessary on your account. I'm taking that to mean that my money order was good because I sent in with I sent in to the Treasury Department a set off bond initially, and then and I sent in an offset bond also with the IRS's name on it specifically. You know, the first bond, the birth certificate, the master bond is to let them know that, you know, I sent in my birth certificates and accepted for value that I want them to use my Treasury direct account, you know, to offset my and discharge my debt. And I sent into the IRS a Form 56 to make the Secretary of Treasury my fiduciary.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Now, have you went back and canceled all future contracts with the Internal Revenue Service?
Future contracts with the Internal Revenue Service, I don't. No, I made sure before I did the before I did the chargeback, I did. I had 3 years taxes that I needed to file. I went ahead and filed those last year and got everything up to date. Then when I got that up to date, then I did the chargeback. But the question you just asked me, I can't answer it because I'm not clear on what you're really asking.
Okay. Did you cancel any future relationships that you would have with the Internal Revenue Service?
Still not clear.
You probably didn't do that. Okay. All right. Well, the only thing that I need you to do is if you could call me, and if they send you anything else, call me. Give me a phone call. Let me know if they sent anything else to you in the mail.
Okay.
You get a call from them, anything.
But I also did, you know, the security agreement between myself, the flesh and blood person, and my straw man. They got a copy of that. I did my power attorney between myself and straw man and my commercial lien in addition to the UCC-1. So they, you know, they understand that, you know, I'm filing taxes on as an authorized representative, you know, for my straw man, but they understand that I am not the straw man, and you know I honor what they say, you know, and I put my money order and take it out of my Treasury direct account, you know, as HJR 192 says that everybody's happy.
All right. Well, have you did a copyright on your straw man?
Yep.
Have you patented?
Yep.
You get a patent?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Hey, good work.
I didn't patent it. I just did the copyright and had it notarized, but I didn't do the TM, you know, with Ohio. I didn't do that, but it's with the where it, in my state it's with the apostille with the Secretary of State for my state.
All right. Well, fantastic, brother. All right. Sir, appreciate you calling in. Let me know that. And
all right.
Keep up good work. Give me a call if any changes, anything crop up out the woods.
Okay.
All right. Let's go down to area code 205. Area code 205. Are you there? Okay. No 205. If you got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand, and I will open up the line and let you in, okay? 440. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, where's your question or comment. 440.
Yes, name is King Aite Zubeda. Is there any site I can go to for step-by-step guidance on how to file these documents in question?
What documents are you trying to get instructions on?
Yes, the right to travel plates.
Okay. All right. Now, when it comes to dealing with the rights to travel, and let me say this, and I hope everybody's listening. There is no documents that you can put somewhere, and after you get them put somewhere, you can go out, get in your vehicle, and ride untouched. It doesn't work that way. You're going to have to learn this knowledge, be prepared to use it when necessary, send proper documents where they need to go, and then enforce them. And that's the way it goes with this particular thing, because we're talking about a nation of people that have hired private contractors to obstruct your flow, just like the brother has spoken of earlier on this. But what I would recommend, if this is something that you want to do, what I would recommend that you do is contact me, Tahaga, and I will tell you on the phone what's necessary, what you're going to have to do. My number is 904-303-9061. That's 904-303-9061. Let me know when you got it.
Yes, sir.
All right. That's how you do that. You don't, because see, this is what we got to understand. Even though there are things that we can do on paper, and we can put some things in place and all of this, we still have to be prepared to defend our position, because the United States operates on a continuous series of contracts called contract law, and everybody has the right to make contracts. All the people that are sending you the bills, the people that's writing the tickets, the Internal Revenue Service, Department of Treasury, everybody operating on contracts. So you're going to have to know how to enforce your contract, because they don't interfere with your right to make contracts.
I understand that. What I've done, because they did give me a ticket, I have written my affidavit up, and I've put down my argument, and I've used Robertson versus Department of Public Works, 108 Wash 133-147.
Uh-huh.
And I've stated my rights, and I'm going to have it notarized and send it in.
Okay.
It's just, and my question would be that once I send this affidavit in, I've been told before that it's not space right, the brief in support of notice for dismissal for lack of jurisdiction should be on a certain side of the paper, and they use these small tactics to throw the case out.
Okay, well, why don't you send it to me and let me look at it, and why don't you call me tomorrow, and we'll iron out all the wrinkles and get it right. And
because I have already emailed it to you, but I understand you're busy, so I was waiting on the reply.
Okay, all right. Here's what you do. Call me in the morning after 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Gotcha.
Let's deal with it from there.
Okay, my brother, thank you.
You're welcome. All right. If anybody else got a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand, And I will open up the line so that you can ask your question, and we can see if we can get you some remedy.
In the near future, okay? As the people begin to become more aware of constitutional principles, and we're talking constitutional principles, and when you talk about constitutional rights, remember this. The Constitution does not give you rights. The Constitution is in place to secure pre-existing rights. And rights do not exist with anyone in a civilized society who's transacting business in an alien name. Meaning, if you're not in your proper person, don't talk about constitutions because it doesn't apply to you. If you make a claim of rights from a constitutional perspective, you are in error. Now, most of the time, they will not, adjudicate a case, except if it comes before the Supreme Court, and then put on the docket plaintiff in error. They'll do that with our people every day. They just won't give them that information so they can't correct themselves. But one of the keys also is that when you agree to that license, 9 times out of 10, that license has a nomen on it indicating a European family. And so since usually the person who's carrying that license is not European, they have automatically what you call a verbal deed on that person, and also creates an injunctive lien, and it doesn't necessarily have to be written. So therefore, the family name automatically goes to the state under wardship law. So if you're transacting business in an alien name, matters no matter how many generations you do it, it's still a fraud. It means that you can be doing this now until you're 99 and then add 10 more years, and they can actually take you to court and sue you. But they don't do that because that's the basis of the economics of how they've maintained forced servitude with these Asiatics that insist on calling themselves Negro, Blacks, and Colored, which are all brands. And so if they have the brands Negro, Black, and Colored, and then they have also the further nomens of ownership, Smith, Jones, Johnson, Williams, and Goldberg, whatever they may be calling themselves this week, it automatically makes them a ward of the state. And the state automatically has jurisdiction, so therefore the courts of prize and booty automatically have jurisdiction because the person is already within the jurisdiction. So the court already has leave, which is why most of the time with our people, they just start adjudicating. They don't go, they don't deal with status. They don't deal with an argument of proper venue or proper jurisdiction. They just proceed and do their nigger trials under the Negro Codes or the Christian Black Codes of 1724. And our people keep calling it two standards of law, but that's the law they're using. They're using the Negro Act, and they use the Christian Black Codes of 1724, adopted in all the states when they closed the Freedmen's Bureau. And so if the people are not aware of that, they don't suspect what that license is for. That license is a movement passport, so they can make sure that you couldn't buy your way out of slavery. And also they made sure that you would never handle money anymore. So after the Civil War, which was actually initiated to overthrow the Republican forms of government in order to institute slavery bureaucratically. They had to overthrow the Republican form of government, and that's the real reason of the Civil War. They will tell you that it was because they were debating about the industry and the Moors, who were branded as blacks, being used in the industrial North, competing with the more agricultural South. And that's why they started the war. No, they started the war because they wanted to make sure that you didn't blend in and take over, because they unseated the Asiatics that were already in government, because it was a process of overthrow. So they had to burn books, reconstruct history, make you think that the Constitution came from England, when it actually comes from ancient Moorish law, which is why that pyramid is on the dollar bill. And that's the federal side, or the superior side of this constitutional republic. So in order to bureaucratize slavery, they couldn't get rid of it, but they had to veil it. And while most scholars will talk about the Master Mason Roosevelt when he was governor of New York, of New Amsterdam, that's New Amsterdam, you understand, New York is New Amsterdam. that he asked for the war powers, and under the war powers, they suspended the Constitution and habeas corpus, and then went, issued the Gold Act and did the bank holiday thing to rob the gold. But actually, that process started at the Civil War under Lincoln. And what they did during the Roosevelt administration is they solidified it. All right, now, because he was still governor, they issued the executive order, was that 39, 40, 39, or 40, 37, excuse those numbers, but I'll check my records. But anyway, that's the bank holiday, and it wasn't legitimate, so because he wasn't president. So the 9th, they confirmed it in order to solidify it, same principle. And so they weren't successful over a period of time. So up until about 1964, they had government agents out systematically giving people Federal Reserve notes, fiat currency, telling you to get your grandmom's gold watches and gold coins, and they'll give you a dollar for two silver quarters, and they'll give you $2 for a silver dollar, and or a dollar for a 50-cent piece, and everybody got all their silver out. That's because they were getting all the real money, because that's the only lawful money, out of your hands, because they had every intention to force everyone in the family to work to survive. So whereas a father was working, and he might have 13 children and a wife, and they were all home, they didn't have the best, but they ate. They didn't have everything, but the children went to school, and they had sneaks and shoes, didn't have 50 pairs, but they had all that. Well, they needed to get the woman out of the house because the plan was to destroy the family. So the deal was, with the fiat currency, they could create, just like currency, just like you turn down electricity, turn down a volume, restrict the water, the flow of the water, and you don't see their face. All you see is each other's face. And you don't recognize it as a third-party action because you think you have money and didn't know that you had script. See, it was in, like, say, up until the late 1800s, most of the people that were held to forced servitude, the different plantations or corporations had the logistical problem of, like, say, delivering to you a certain amount of goods for certain services that your company might render our company, and of course our workers or our slaves or servants were beneficiaries, that because like cattle they had to be cared for, and they couldn't let you go because you might run away. That's another reason why the license was thrown up too, and that agreement with the several states. All right, so the deal was with the fiat currency, you do the same work, but then they would call it Job, you know, like in the Bible, Job. Take everything from you, make you curse your God. That's where job come from. So they give you a job, yes, give you a job with the same expenses that they would have to deliver, say, to Smith, and would have to leave the corporation or the plantation, both the same. Very often, as William Lynch had said, you know, they'd burn, sometimes burn the farms, leave the crop in the field, because, you know, certain points of the moon, you have to pick the crop. And if you don't, it's through. So most of our people know those natural systems of agriculture and how the planets work. And so we were more in tune with nature, although over generations we lost it. So we had one up, except for, you say, some of the younger generation where they separated them from the mothers who kept the civilization alive so they wouldn't learn the culture. And then they gave us idol gods, but they needed to have regulation. So when they used the fiat, or if they used a script, they could give you the impression that you're making progress. Same finance. And then they'd send you. You wouldn't run because now you think you're getting paid. No, this is serious. This is how it works. So you're under the impression that you're getting paid when you actually are not allowed to hold money. This is where the deficit comes in. That's why you keep going in debt. And more people in your family are working, but the national debt, it keeps getting bigger. It is because of the counterfeit currency. They're really labor certificates. And then the license is used to transact any business you do with those instruments so they can calculate, keep a database, and regulate how you're moving it so they can deal with the resources. Do you understand? So the instrument is used as a database to check what you spend, where you go, what you have. And everything that you possess that's of any quality or any economic power, as far as a house or an instrument of transport, like a vehicle, a conveyance, must be registered to the state. That is used in commerce. So it really isn't yours, but it gives the impression that it's yours. That's why they'll say registered to the state of New Jersey, house registered to your deed. And so most people think a deed is allodial, correct? So they work all their life, pay this house off, and they think they got an allodial piece of property because they got a deed. Well, a deed is a rental fee under feudal law. It's not a title of possession. In other words, you're possessively caretaking for it, which is why after you receive that deed, you still pay taxes at a high rate that's just as big as your mortgage when you first started paying, because you never own it. It belongs to the state corporation. But they own it because they own you. You see how simple that is? And I'm saying that so that you don't get caught up in the emotionalism of looking at the objects, but recognize it's actually your status that establishes that anything you own belongs to the state, including your children. And so the marriage license is another instrument that's used the same way, same with the birth certificate. The birth certificate is used so the corporation or the plantation claims the birth of the child. Like you get a certificate and it'll say born in the state of New Jersey. Say born in Camden in the state of New Jersey. So that means the Camden Municipal Corporation gave you birth, being subject to the New Jersey State Corporation established in 1844, and that's your mother. And that's a certificate where the mother signs the child over to the hospital, who is in cahoots with the state under the Christian Black Codes, and they regulate, and they're like spies. They tell everything, and they operate together. Now, you look back into the Christian Black Codes of 1724, and you'll see the absolute relationship between the hospital and the state. All right? So the offspring of the womb automatically belongs to the state, and so that you don't feel uncomfortable, instead of saying slave, they'll call it WARD, ward of the state. So the child being state property, that instrument or that birth certificate, being that's their property under commercial auspices, is transferred into a stock. And so at birth, that child, I think as of now, was about 20 years ago, was about $16,000. So about now it's probably $30,000-some-odd, or representative 35,000 units, that when the child is born and that certificate is put on them, that burden is already put on that child. So what they do, they borrow against it, project it on the tax that they expect to get from that thing during its life cycle. All right? So
last I was reading, it was $630,000.
$630,000 now?
$30,000.
Yeah, that's because it accelerated exponentially.
And they have on a birth certificate, mother or other informant.
Yes, yeah.
They were informant.
Yes, and they're agents. And also when those things, and remember, and don't take offense, from a political perspective, they're listed as it. They're not listed as people. Yes. Negroes, blacks, and colored are listed in government and in military as it. And also if they are neutralized in a war or conflict, they're listed as advisors. So if you see in any conflict where a certain amount of persons are neutralized and they say so many advisors died, they're Asiatics of Asiatic African birth. They're not listed as citizens. This is also why they have a difficulty, as you see over the years, you see different wars go up that take place, and you see different people start movements to try to get these people recognized and all this stuff, you know, from Troop 54, from the Civil War and all that kind of stuff, and they're doing all kind of stuff to get them recognized. The reason why they're not, because they're not citizens, they're property. They're property of the citizens. Whoever's name they bear, that's bonded. They're under liens and bonds from birth. So they're born in sin. And born in sin does not mean, like, you know, right and wrong. Born in sin means born in ignorance. Sin is ancient Hebrew, and when they translate, just like when they translate the Bible, they don't translate the culture. They translate European romantic culture and interject Constantine's principles, when in actuality that means ignorance. Sin is ignorance or lack of knowledge. All right, so keep that in mind. But one of the reasons why I'm giving these points, and I want you to really take them to heart, because what we want to do eventually is get most of the Asiatics conscious so that we can solve both the profiling problem, because we're going to do a national suit, class action, and then we're going to world court too. But the deal is we want to get the people conscious on a local level, and then we want to give them enough information so they can start fighting cases even on the very local level, elemental, municipal level. So keep in mind that the driver's license comes under excise taxation. And the fact that it expires proves what to you relative to identity? Does your identity expire? Can your identity expire? Well, why does your identity expire with the driver's license? Because it's not an identification card. It's a proof of contract information. It's a prima facie article, instrument used to regulate your economy. Do you understand? See, for instance, like this. Now, sis, all right, say we're married, right? And you're our children. And we're struggling to try to make it do our thing, right? They regulate what you produce. How? Because they already know that you don't really have money. Because it's all bookkeeping. So they got all the records on you, and the IRS is a private corporation of 12 sections. It's 12 corporations in sections that are operating for the European corporate slaveholders, translated from the plantations to the corporations. It is not the government of the United States Republic. Don't confuse that. It's private corporations who are bill collectors for Congress people and other people who have investments in chattel property, many which have been received by primogeniture. That means the principle of slavery was passed down to generations. So you inherit that no different than you inherit real estate. And they come under the same principles. So you must understand this. It's not opinion. It's law. And by you not knowing this is how a lot of our people in the small communities are always taken advantage of, and they call it prejudice. But prejudice is put out there for you to divert the attention from what's really happening to you. You know, so like if somebody stole the factory that you're supposed to get from your mother, they start an organization for the National Association of Colored People's Cookie Stealing thing, so you don't steal as many cookies as they did last year, and you call it progress. And you say, well, why would they even help us and then give us some contributions and stuff like that, some tax, some, you know, 501c3 tax benefits so that we can do this organization that actually condemns them? It's because they're diverting you from the big load. Because they already know it's against the divine laws of nature, and that the nature of the being is to rebel. It's against nature. So if they give you something to divert your energies makes an agreement ethereally with the atmosphere, and then all is well because you say it is, but it is not. And so that takes the karmic load off of him, and you accept it in a contract that you don't know is a contract. And you think that you're doing right. And when you violate, he tells you you broke the law. And you don't even know it has nothing to do with law whatsoever. The contract makes the law. Are you clear? Are you following me? I don't want to get past anyone, because it's very important that you understand these concepts. And you understand these concepts that I'm telling you for correction are ancient. They're ancient principles of civilization, from the great law, the great peace, from which the Constitution that governs this land in this day was adopted from. They didn't draft this document up from some Englishman that was trying to find some religious freedom. No, Moors 35 Moors and 20 European sons in agreement to stop the continuous wars between the Muslim Moors and the Christian Crusaders, to stop these hundreds of years wars, established the United States Republic of North America as a beacon light for the entire civilized world, which is what that Constitution absolutely represents. So understand, you're part of this thing. Don't look at that Constitution as being just for the European sons. It is not. They took it that way and projected that way to you. So when they come at you that way, you correct it. But believe me, if you're using his name, you have no standing in law, no judicio standi. And so the Constitution does not apply to you. And so when you look at certain problems that we're having, and we keep saying that we don't have due process rights, etc., it is because you're out.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, that is some very, very interesting information and some very vital points that was made in regards to contract and law. And I would like to encourage you to listen to this over and over so you can get the most vital points of this stuff out so that you clearly understand. Keep in mind that the lines are open. If you got a question or comment, go ahead and open raise your hand. I will recognize your hand. Now, I want to talk about the ticket. When you get that ticket out there on the street, when you get a ticket, that's an offer. They're making an offer to contract. So at this point, we have to, if they're asking you for property that belongs to the state, which they're asking you for, they'll say driver's license and registration. They're asking you for property that belongs to the state. They're not asking you for an identity. They're not asking you to clearly show that you are a man or a woman. We need to know whether or not you have contracted with us. That's what they're asking you for. Because a lot of us has fallen into the trap of thinking that we need permission to do something that naturally we, for hundreds of, well, let me put it to you this way. Let's just use common sense for a minute. Because during the Roman Empire, there were people that went back and forth, up and down the road. And I'm wondering where did they get their driver's license from? Where did they get a license plate to put on the back of their cart when it was hauling fruits and vegetables to the market back and forth, traveling across the land? Where? So if it did not exist, why is it now that it is mandatory for us to have this by law, by law? I'm not talking about nothing somebody made up to make some revenue, because it seems to me that the majority of the people that have driver's license are paying through the nose. I just come out of the Florida Keys yesterday, and as we come from there, I noticed that they have cameras. People are being, the cameras are catching certain information, presenting this as evidence of the fact that you didn't pay your toll, or that you were speeding. And so we sent a bill to your house in the form of a contract. We need you to pay that. You know, we will not allow you to be free. We will keep a foot on your neck no matter what. Even if we had to do it through technology, we're going to do it. But my question is, how many people are suing them about this? How many people are getting sued over it? That's what I'm with.
The individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he can't believe it exists.
The law is whatever the powers that be in power happen to say it is today. Whatever they say it is, that's what the law is today. And it may change tomorrow.
As people started to live together in societies, there was nothing to prevent individuals from infringing upon the rights and freedoms of each other. Once that happened, there were only two choices: either protect ourselves or elect a group of individuals to protect our rights for us. We chose the latter, and thus law was born to protect our rights and freedoms.
We have no law in America. And understand that. There is a Roman maximum in law that says, "For he that would be deceived, let him." Simply meaning, if you are so ignorant as to be deceived, then that's your business. That's your problem. So you need to do your homework and find out what words mean, especially in relation to law and government. Because there is a world of occultism that is operating today throughout the world, in which you use certain words, and when those words are used in a court, they don't mean the same thing at all.
Jordan Maxwell speaks about words, words are definitely his forte. He also speaks about where words come from.
Understanding law and the words of law, there are two things that this planet has: water and earth, water and land. Consequently, there are two kinds of law: the law of the land and the law of water. You've heard the term law of the land, but in point of fact, that's precisely what this word means, law of the land, because it is the people who live on land. And that is opposed to something else called the law of the high seas, or the law of water. You need to understand the difference. The law of the land is the law of the culture that lives on the land. And so consequently, the law of the land is different in every country. You can do things in America you can't do in Russia. You can do things in Africa you can't do in England. So the law of the land is the law of the culture that lives on that particular land. However, there is a higher law that dominates the entire world. It's called the law of the water, or the law of the high seas. The law of water is referred to as the law of money. It doesn't matter what color you are, where you're from, or where you live. Money is money. And anytime you're doing banking or using money, you are now under the law of water, maritime admiralty.
In the film, The Occult World of Commerce, Jordan Maxwell and Jason Whitney give a great overview explaining in depth the important differences between the two law systems, how they were merged, and how this affects how we live today. Countries' laws end at the borders of their land. It's also known as common law, the law of the common people. The proper English common law was originally based on the Ten Commandments section of the Old Testament of the Christian Bible, but it's also considered to be common sense law. The common law that's developed over time has but one purpose. That sole purpose is to protect our fundamental rights and freedoms of life, liberty, and property. The purpose of law was never to restrict or destroy our rights and freedoms. Its sole purpose, then and now, is for the preservation and protection of these gifts.
There are two different kinds of law. There is civil law, which is the law of the land, and there is UCC, which is maritime law. UCC stands for Uniformed Commercial Code, which was created thousands of years ago by the Phoenician Canaanites.
Marine law of the law of water is the law of money, or currency. It is the law that governs all money in the world, and is the same type of law in every country with a central bank. It is also known as commercial law, covering all forms of commerce. You may not have heard of the Uniform Commercial Code, or the UCC, but it is the foundation of how all modern financial transactions are handled, and while very complex, understanding it gives a great insight as to how the banking game is played.
The entities who created this system understood that they could not control you, the flesh and blood you, but if they turned you into a corporation under the UCC law, then they would effectively be able to have that control.
Because the government created a situation when we're in perpetual debt, but that is unlawful. So they also gave us a remedy, a solution to fix it, but they hid it from us.
Whenever we're dealing in a business, then you, all countries and all corporations, work under UCC.
Throughout history, law has been corrupted and used in many ways it was never intended to be used. Laws have also been created to control and enslave people for the sole benefit of those in power. Before the implementation of marine law, which was layered to exist over our already existing common law, in the United States of America, people were called sovereigns. That is, you were your own country. You were considered a soul created by God, and you were born and owned your own body. Instead of a first and a last name, like you have today, you had what was called a Christian and family name. Not only did you own your own body, but you were completely responsible for it. You could use any substance you wished to your own benefit or peril. If two men consented to having a gunfight in the streets, to the death, it was their right as long as it was consensual. The sheriff would stand by to make sure no innocents got injured in what was a perfectly legal duel. Self-responsibility was the order of the day, which was either a blessing or a curse to the people. Common law ruled the land. Treat others the way you want to be treated, the real golden rule. Now, under common law, all interactions with your fellow man were and are some form of contract and consent. There were fewer layers of law in existence before the merging of common and marine law, and so, for example, there was no such thing as fraud, because as a sovereign who was personally responsible, at any time you could have said no. People had to be more diligent in who they dealt with, and thus, as reputation was actually considered important, people would try and honor their contracts and earn an honest living, using the court systems only for criminal prosecutions or contract disputes. Simpler times back then indeed, but also more primitive as well. Perhaps we're learning to say no again.
And if you look at the whole entire picture, the government is only your representative and representatives of your neighbors. So who are they to demand that you get a license in order to engage in an action which is fundamentally lawful?
If we don't make a stand, I mean, the reason that these guys have the power they have is because we don't say anything. It's this whole tacit agreement thing. And, you know, because we didn't stand up and make claims to stop the authorities from doing what they do, they've just sort of taken over. And so we're all running scared because we don't realize that all we have to do is say no.
You need to understand there's legal and lawful, and there's illegal and unlawful. Legal means you are operating correctly by the form or by the letter of the law. Lawfully tends to speak to the spirit of the law as opposed to the letter of the law.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, that's very interesting. But let's go back and look at this ticket again. And so the gentleman outside that is masquerading officer of the law is asking you for property that belongs to someone else or belongs to something else. And because often people are being threatened out on the streets. If you don't give me a permission slip to do something that we have deemed unlawful, then we are going to knock your windows out of your car. We are going to drag you out of the vehicle, your automobile. We are going to tow your automobile, and we are going to put you behind bars, and where we have steel and concrete, and we can further violate you. In other words, we're going to destroy public property, and then we are going to commit an act of abduction. You see what I'm saying to you? So this is what's going on in a lot of places. I would like to encourage people to make sure that you have yourself positioned to acquire evidence to present before a court of law. Now, keep in mind that there is only one real court inside the United States. That's the International Court of Trade. And we're going to deal with nationality and all that because we have human rights violations, and we have violations against the rights of Aboriginal people, rightful owner people of the land. And so we want to make sure that we get everybody that's involved in this particular conspiracy or fraud or attack and do whatever we have to do by any means necessary, if you understand what I'm saying to you in regards to that. But we're going to say that they give you a ticket, or what they're calling a ticket, and just as the gentleman described to you earlier, it's a lawsuit. They're forcing you. Oh, it's all force. It's all force. It has absolutely nothing to do with law. Period. Nothing to do with law. And so, therefore, in a lot of cases, what we are faced with is self-preservation, which is the first law of nature, and we have to protect ourselves. We have to defend ourselves against an attacker. Okay, and I know it sounds kind of rough and all of this, and, you know, because we got a lot of people who say, well, why don't you just pay, you know, and just, you know, just going on about your business. I have to disagree with that. One gentleman told me once, he lived in New York City, and he said he was selling these products and stuff out on the streets. And someone would come by once, sometime twice a week, and rob him. And he'd get back out there and selling, he'd try to look out, and he'd come back and then rob him again. And I asked him, I said, well, you kept doing this. You kept going out there. You kept trying to sell your product, and somebody kept coming around and robbing you. I said, "What did you do?" Well, I didn't do anything. I would limit the amount of money. I said, "So you tried to accommodate the robber, or position yourself so that you wouldn't rob that bad, or something like that." I don't understand that kind of thinking. I ain't never been the type of person to understand that kind of thinking. You know, I guess I was just cut out from a different type of cloth and something, but that's something I don't understand. But we do have people who actually believe that what's going on is normal and natural, and that they're supposed to do this, that, and the other. And then we got the same robbers that's actually people. So now, how do you justify being stopped by somebody that's robbing you against the rights that you have, and then turn around and kill you? And then you run down somewhere and protest and hold up a sign and march and sing. And I don't understand this kind of thinking. I don't understand that. There's something I don't understand. I keep looking at it, and I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with you, what's going on inside your brain. I don't understand that kind of thing. But anyway, the ticket. Stop you, give you the ticket, and me personally, I can't be in agreement with that because you're trying to shake me down. You're trying to rob me. You're trying to take something from me that's not rightfully yours to have. So I have no choice. Don't have no choice. You don't leave me no choice but to do whatever I have to do by any means necessary. But anyway, the ticket, what I do with that is take that and I just sign crossing no contract because he's trying to give me a contract with him. I'm refusing to contract with you, so I can't do that. But I'm going to argue with you. I'm going to argue. There ain't going to be no big hoopla about this. Just follow procedure, and I would take that and deal with that a little bit later on involving that situation. But it is I'm witnessing some of the most extraordinary circumstances because people, they do not have knowledge about themselves. They don't know anything about the law. I know the law has been taken out of the school system, but what have you done to go back to understand this? If nothing is going on, there's peace in the house, there's tranquility, you working, your wife's working, everything's going fine, now is the time to study, research, do the research, get the information in your head so that you will be able, because I always understood that if you have the number two, and someone come and take away one, you don't have a one left. Two, take away one, leave one. So I ain't never been big on somebody taking something from me. And if I was right, I was right. If you were wrong, you were wrong. And the matter had to be settled. But it depends on the situation that you're involved in. If the policeman cuts his lights on you, he's declaring an emergency. So now, according to the law, we have to look and determine whether or not there's an injured party. And if there's no injured party, he has committed a felony. That's a surfboard that you can get on and ride all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. If he's asking you for property that belongs to somebody else, he's not asking you anything about your identity, your nationality, anything, or your rights, or anything of that nature. So I always keep my business cards with me so that we can exchange information. So you can tell me, give me your card, and I'll give you my card. And then, whatever it is that you're doing is fine. You know, we've exchanged information. You have your position, I have mine, and all this. I've been stopped by them before. There was never any argument. You know, because I believe that the most important thing that every man has to have is knowledge of his own self. Who are you? You have to know who you are. What is your nationality? What is your identity? Who are you? If you have agreed to be something that you're not, that's a mistake. If the letters are in all capital letters, that couldn't possibly be you. All you have to do is look up the definition. So if something is wrong. So you have to straighten that kind of business out. But a lot of us, and I can't blame people because the average person just wants peace. Okay, you stop by the robber. He says you done this, you violated this, you violated that, and all this right here, you owe me money. But we can't do this. I remember there was a man, and this man was one of the sorriest men that ever walked the face of the planet. He lived in a place where a man had a large family of sons. And these men were master hunters, master fishermen, master trappers. These boys were bad boys. But this young man lived down the hill. This man was so lazy that he had big holes in the roof of his house. He lived with his mother. And when it rained, the water just poured in the house. And what he would do, instead of trying to fix the roof, he would go and pile cover on the bed to get under the cover so it wouldn't get wet that quick. It was amazing. But then one day, he jumped on his mama, beat his mama down. And the boys found out about it. And they went down the street, boy, they tried to get him to go hunting. They tried for almost a year. Well, it was over a year. And he never would go hunting with them boys because he was lazy. But finally, they got him to go hunting. Now, this lady here, she didn't have no husband, and she would come down there and they would feed her, give her food and anything that they took from the field and stuff so she could feed herself and she could feed them too. But he take and jump on her and beat her down. And there's no mama now. But finally them boys made a coat. And they brought him to say, well, look, we're going to give you this coat. You go hunting with us. And he agreed. He came out of the house and went hunting with him. When they got out in the middle of the woods, one of them boys hit him in the back of the head with a rifle. And when he hit the ground, the other brother shot him and killed him, and he dug a hole and buried him. When the police came up there, they said, well, you know anything about the burying? They said, we don't know nothing. And don't come back here no more. Don't come back. They ain't see him no more. But anyway, I told that story because there are different types of people on the planet. A lot of people go for a whole lot of stuff. Some people don't. Some people you mess with them, they'll go up your know what, like a bad storm. And I've seen these kind of men before, and I know these kind of men. So what you have to do, in my opinion, I think that you have to study and get the power. Get the knowledge, get the power, and then you're able to do some things. And if you don't do that, in my opinion, you don't have no power. You have no power. So you're going to have to actually do the research so that you will know how to handle situations when they come your way. And when it comes to law, it is vital that you understand law and you know what to do anytime you're confronted by a criminal that's trying to extort money from you. I've had men attempt to rob me. I've had men, had a man, he told me something about extortion. But some kind of way, he disappeared. I don't know what happened to him. But I had a friend of mine come and told me that after he told somebody else about who he's been robbed, they told him, no. And he didn't come back no more. But anyway, my question is, what kind of cloth are you cut out of? What are you prepared to do? What are you prepared to do? I'm not talking about what you thinking about doing. What are you prepared to do? What type of skills do you have? What rolls off your back like water off the back of a duck when it comes to a situation and dealing with it? What are you prepared to do? What are you prepared to do? I know men that will literally and physically go into the jailhouse and start killing. I know these people. I know what kind of men these is. I already been around them. So what I get confused about is when I see males calling themselves men, masquerading as men. That's confusing to me. It's most one of the most interesting things. I can't understand how you got that way. I don't understand that kind of thinking, that kind of fear. Where you get fear from? What's it doing inside of you? I don't understand that.
If people really understood what's going on, we're too used to the rights we've had. It wouldn't be tolerated. If people really truly understood what was going on, there would be a major political reaction, and the people that are in power right now would not be there. And they don't want to take the chance. And that's what people have to understand, that there still is this vestige of democracy here, and we still should be exercising it before the police state apparatus descends that doesn't really and truly removes from us the capacity to take control of our destiny.
The founding fathers of the United States desired people to have the right to life, liberty, and property, along with the free will to enjoy them and the responsibility to respect the rights of others. After fighting their revolution for freedom from colonialism, the founders were intelligent enough to retain a healthy fear of the similar threats posed by corporate power and wisely limited corporations exclusively to a business role. In the United States of America, up until around the mid to late 1800s, in order to create a company or corporation, you would have to go through the arduous process of earning a charter from a particular state, which was both limited in duration and function, needing to be renewed, but also subject to rules, regulations, and heavy taxes. They were also mandated to serve the public interest, with profit being the result to shareholders who were part of the public. If they exceeded their authority, went against their charter, or went against the public interest, a corporation's charter could be revoked, rendering it invalid, and essentially destroying it in the legal sense. The concept of corporate personhood came about around this time, which quickly gained popularity with business leaders. Discussed and dissected at length in the brilliant film The Corporation, corporate personhood is the act of giving a company, which is a legal corporation or entity, the privileges of a regular human person, such as the ability to own property, hold assets, contribute to politics, or influence legislation. With this change in the law, the corporation had gained legal status along with rights and duties, becoming an artificial person.
A sovereign individual is a human who is no longer a corporation, thus no longer being ascribed by certain duties and rights.
What I uncovered was that when a person is registered from birth, it's at that point in time that they are actually being created, or that a legal person is being created and associated with them. And it's kind of like it's at that point where you join a club, and when you join this club, you're given, say, a membership card. The card itself would be your person, as opposed to the human being who is the member of the club.
Person is, even in English, person is a persona. So it's not really you, it's something that you're creating. So, you know, from English to law, it means the same thing. It's an entity, something that you create or somebody else creates and you give power to.
Because we're all equal, nobody has a right to govern you without your consent. So they require evidence that you have consented to this. The person is that evidence, that card or the... your identification, which would identify you as a person. All of this is what they need to see so that they know that they do have the right to act upon you.
After the U.S. Civil War, in 1868, a corporation was created by members of the Bank of England called United States Company. The owners of this company decided that the employees of the United States would not be called employees, but citizens. To run this corporation would be a board of directors called the United States Government, and they would have a president just like any company, It would also have a constitution, just like the Republic called America. And people who signed up to be employee citizens would be given political and legal rights, like voting and owning land.
I think they did it when they got everyone to become a government employee. And then that this way, where normally they would be our servants and we would be in charge of them, they tricked us all into getting social insurance numbers. These numbers identify us as a government employee. We're receiving benefits, as they call them, and therefore we are bound by the rules that bind all government employees. And so they've tricked us. We're a nation of people employed by the government, bound by the rules that the government makes, but only because we are employed by them.
However, there is a grand distinction between the United States Corporation, which is a company, and the United States of America, which is the geographical location and country. Today we live in a world where we are sold on the notion that our fundamental rights still exist, but there are times when we must wonder if this is true. For example, we can have the full force of the law brought down upon us over a traffic violation, income tax irregularity, refusing to fill in a census form, even growing or using natural substances. These offenses do no harm to another human being and in no way violate any individual's fundamental rights and freedoms. So we must ask, how did things get like this? The answer is that your fundamental rights and freedoms are still intact as a natural person, but you've been tricked into believing that you have to follow the laws created for the corporate artificial person. This deception has only grown over the last 140 years. Some argue this period in history was the seed of what has grown into today's expansive modern legal system. Others believe that this was the beginning of the end for the great experiment known as the Republic of the United States of America. As a human being, you have guaranteed unalienable human rights. By virtue of existing and being what is known as a child of God, whatever religion you may or may not subscribe to, your rights come from the concept that you are a result of divine creation. This is supported by documents throughout history like the Magna Carta, UN Declaration of Human Rights, various constitutions, bills of rights, and charters of rights and freedoms of different countries. Unalienable, or unalienable rights, as in, no one can place a lien on your rights. They are yours to use freely.
The most fundamental thing that I've learned through all this is that they speak English, but it's a whole other language coming out of their mouth. And hence lawyers spending 8 years or whatever it takes to become a lawyer. They're trying to go and understand what the words and how this thing works.
If you try and speak to them in English or any other language, they won't be able to engage with you. You need to use their documents. And the reason why you need to use their documents is because you are within their corporation.
Well, they certainly don't teach you about what the law is about. A lot of times there seems to be a more of a societal or a community conditioning where people that at 16 they go and they get their driver's license and it's a big deal for them, and yet they never ask themselves first, do I really need a driver's license in order to exercise rights? They get a social insurance number because they want to work legally in Canada, but yet they never study and understand the difference between, say, a contract for service and a contract for hire. So they're, to a large degree, they don't really teach much. It's almost more of a conditioning program that conditions you to believe certain falsehoods.
If you don't know your rights, you don't have any. And if you have to ask someone else what your rights are, you've just given them the power to tell you what your rights are.
All right, Moses, we back. Now, if you got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand, and we will open up the phone line so you can get
during a natural disaster and economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information, and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, for more details. Area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, let's take one more look at how the brain works, and then we'll get down into the meat and potatoes of what we got left here. First of all, everything that you see, everything that you smell, everything that you hear, everything that you taste, everything that you feel is recorded by the brain. The only thing that you have to do is control what is being recorded by the brain that's sitting on top of your shoulders. When you cut on the television set, you have just allowed somebody else to control a certain amount of your consciousness, and it's being recorded by the brain, and it will manifest itself in your actions. You understand what I'm saying to you? So this is the way I look at it. If the brain belongs to you, why would you allow somebody else to control is recording? Are you saying to yourself that I'm not responsible, I'm not capable, I was born this way, it was given to me, God gave it to me, but I have to loan its control to somebody else? Well, I don't think so. I think that if it's on your shoulders and you carry it around with you every day, then I think that you should control the consciousness. You should control the recording. You should control what's inside it and how it manifests itself in this life. I think that's what you should do. And in my opinion, if I feel like if I sit down and I caught on the television set, and I'm conscious, continuously seeing somebody else's concept of reality that I can't identify with, then I have a problem. If I'm going to a school, a college, a university, and I'm constantly being presented with images and stories and people and places and things that I can't identify with, then I have a serious problem. I cannot help but manifest myself in a deficit. Now, when I was in junior high school, they told us that we had to learn Spanish. They told us we had to learn French. But I'm of African descent. No one told me or presented any program to me about learning about the African people, are the great magnificent things that they done, the contributions that they brought. That was never taught to me. I was taught English. I was taught mathematics. I was taught social studies. Now, the social studies were very interesting because it was always about the European countries and what they done over there. Never, ever, ever were we presented with anything about something that I could identify with, even though when I left the school and went back to my neighborhood, that's all I seen was people that looked like me in their life. And their, so it seems to me that I was being programmed to become dysfunctional, you see. And I know I'm telling the truth because I have seen things in this life. I've seen people do things to other people, and they just react in the way that I was like, oh, my goodness, I don't understand this right here. What are you? Lord, it makes my hands shake to see certain things that I know doggone well that's not a part of my consciousness, and I would not react in that manner, you see. So when it comes to law, when it comes to contract law, when it comes to driver's license, when it comes to commerce and all these things, I think that we need to control our consciousness. And that way we are able to help ourselves. We're able to defend ourselves. We're able to succeed and accomplish something. I don't like being an oyster in the ocean, and whichever way the ocean goes, that's which way I get tossed. No. I can't do that. And so by understanding commerce and understanding the rules and regulations of the games and stuff, then we're able to play these games successfully. Now I want to go over here to Brother Dr. Umar Johnson, and let's hear what this brother got to say for a few minutes, and we will be right back, okay?
Well, I agree with you. Polygamy doesn't have much to do with sex at all on the part of the man. It has to do with his responsibility and obligation to the community. Black people in this country have one of the greatest disproportionate ratios between male and female numbers in the society. There's about one black man for every 12 black women in this country. It's one of the greatest male-female disparities in the world, and definitely the greatest in the Western Hemisphere. And so whenever there's not enough men to go around, the women share them. That's nothing new. Black women are sharing black men right now. So we're not introducing polygamy. We already have it. We've never not been without it. But what we're saying is that the women are being exploited because the system is undercover, in the back door. It's a secret. And as a result of that, the men are not accountable to the women many of the times. The women are not accountable to each other. The children are confused because they have brothers and sisters who they can't even acknowledge as brothers and sisters. I deal with that a lot in the school. And what I'm saying is that we're going to have to make the polygamy transparent and accountable, so that it is viewed as respectable, and so that the women get their just due, because as it goes right now, it's just the wild, wild west. Every man doing whatever he wants to do, 3, 4, 5 women. He's not accountable to any of them. And, of course, this isn't all men. I know a lot of brothers who practice polygamy, and they're very responsible. But there's also a lot of them who are not, and the sisters are suffering. Now, we know on the radio and Facebook and Twitter and the Internet, you know, the sisters say that I would never share my husband, but as a psychologist, I can tell you that they will, because the same women who say they won't, behind closed doors, I find out that they're sharing. I do therapy, so I know for a fact that what people say in public and what they practice in private is two totally different things. There's no black woman who's going to be without a man, and there's no black woman who wants a child who ain't going to have one just because it ain't no available men. She's going to share somebody else's. That is a big issue in our community, because the church is treating polygamy as some sort of immoral institution, even though it's the oldest form of marriage in existence, which is quite ironic, because many of the pastors are the greatest practicers of polygamy in the black community, who are as sleeping with other women's wives. So it's amazing that a man who's fornicating and adultering all through his congregation is going to say he's against plural marriage. It's nonsense. And because so many of our women have bought into the white woman's lib movement, they see polygamy as an attack on them personally. And because a lot of our sisters have already been subject to polygamous arrangements where they have been taken advantage of, I totally understand why some of them want nothing to do with it. I totally understand, because many of them have already been in it, been used by it, used up, exploited, and thrown away. So I'm not upset at my sisters. I'm simply saying that if men do it and do it right, the women would be willing to accept it after they've seen it work. But many sisters who know of sisters who have been in polygamous arrangements, they did not benefit from it. They were simply exploited by it. Our sister's greatest fear, black women's greatest fear as it relates to polygamy, is whether or not I am really going to have my needs met in this arrangement. Am I really going to be taken care of in this arrangement? Or am I still going to have to take care of my man and share him at the same time. So I understand where she's coming from. I also don't think that black men are psychologically, going back to the need to condition the children, again, a lot of black men are not psychologically in a condition where they can practice polygamy because many of us have sexually objectified the black woman as nothing more than a sexual instrument. So when we hear of two or three wives, all we think of is two or three times more ass and more vagina. So many of us aren't looking at the responsibilities that come with polygamy. If you're going to have two wives, that's two households you got to provide for. That's two medical coverages you got to provide for. That's two sets of children and college tuition that you have to provide for. So we have to look at the financial responsibilities of a man who's willing to get involved in this. And more importantly, polygamy has to be held, has to be organized and regulated by the elders. You have to go to the elders and apply for the right to have a second wife. You don't just take one because you feel like it. The community has to determine that it's in the best interest of the community. My approach to polygamy is totally foreign to what most people think of when they think of polygamy. For example, if a man is going to have four wives, one of those wives is going to be a woman who might can't bear children at all, but who wants a husband and wants a companionship. One of those women might be quite physically unattractive. She may have six or seven children. She's highly undesirable because she has six or seven children, and that's going to be your third or fourth wife. Most of us think of polygamy as taking four of the finest sisters we can find who've never been touched, virgins with no children. That's not how it's going to run. It's going to run in such a way that all the women benefit, not just the fine women. So you're going to be forced to take on wives that are less than desirable because if you're really about polygamy, you're about sacrificing your particular desires for the sake of the community. That's the type of polygamy that Umar Johnson is talking about.
Yeah, because I hear a lot of people, I heard some people criticizing you about the, what you just said, and they said, oh, well, he's just all about the sex, you know, and all that.
Black men already have the sex. They already have the sex. Black men are already getting as much as they want and more because there ain't enough of us to go around. So polygamy ain't got nothing to do with sex because you can get sex. And everybody on this phone knows exactly what I'm talking about. You can get sex with no accountability whatsoever. So if I was all about the sex, I would not bring up the topic because by bringing up the topic, I'm holding men accountable and responsible to the women that they're dealing with. So if it was all about the sex, I don't even need to mention polygamy because any of us could get as many women as we want because there's a shortage of black men. So if it was about sex, why would I even introduce the concept of being responsible and accountable to the community and the women? It doesn't make sense. But again, so many women have been scarred by men, abused by men, exploited by men, that they are so afraid to even consider it because they're not thinking logically. They're thinking with their own emotional pain body. Not logic, but ego and pain, which is why it's going to take black men to organize and bring polygamy to the sisters collectively, and it's going to take black women who do practice polygamy to organize and bring it to the other sisters. But we're not going to get this done with men and women thinking out of lust or thinking out of ego, emotion, and past hurt. This is a collective thing that although everybody does not have to practice, you don't have to practice it, but you must uphold and respect it. As long as the stigma is there, women are not going to participate in it because they're going to be castigated by other women as being weak black women for recognizing the common sense situation in which we're in, and that is all of you are sharing anyway. Why not get something out of it?
Okay, Mose, we're back. Now, that was interesting and some very, very powerful information put down by Brother Doc. Dr. Umar Abdullah Johnson. And what we have to be concerned about also is other parts of our lives that we are involved in so that we can have some smooth sailing. And I want to play that. I have some other clips and stuff that I want to play as well. But we are on the topic of dealing with this situation involving these contracts and law and all of this kind of stuff. So we want to make sure that we get this stuff straight. Okay? All right. Now, if you have a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand. I will open up the line, and you can get in. Okay? All right. Now, we're going to take another caller at area code 850. I'm going to open up your line and get in here. 850, tell me who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment. 850.
Islam Moore. This is
Islam Moore.
Calling from Panama City, Florida Territory.
Okay.
What's on your mind? We're being harassed when traveling on the highways, and we have followed your process of setting up the estate and becoming the executor, and we have proclaimed our Moorish nationality, and we have everything in order. And I think I heard, like, on one of your older shows, everything is in order and it's properly filed, and they get behind us, they should be able to read our tag and say, okay, they are Moorish national, and everything should be hands-off. But if it's not hands-off and we get abducted, when does that fee schedule come into effect, and how are the numbers arrived at?
Okay. The fee schedule and any documentation that you have previously sent to them is automatically in effect. And the numbers, if you, for instance, if you have if I'm detained, I am seeking restitution in the amount of $5,000. Now, your average small court can give out, settle on $5,000. If you watch all your court with the little daytime court shows that they have on, it's always within the confines of $5,000. Never. Very seldom do you see, you don't see, I've never seen anything over $5,000. Okay,
right.
This is in municipal courts and stuff. So this is what we put. Now, when it comes to a human rights violation, we want to start at $50,000 and up. If it comes to a violation of rights of indigenous people, the rightful owners of the land, now we're looking at an additional $50,000 and up. And these are to be filed in the federal courts and then either before the International Courts of Trade in that situation. But those are that's how the numbers are derived.
Right. Islam.
Islam. Okay. Has anybody else got another question or comment? We're going to take a little quick break, and we will be right back. Hold on.
I'm Sharice Nicole with Coco Fab TV. We're at LA Live for your all-access pass to everything BET Awards. What is it that you love about a woman?
You know what? I love confidence in women. I love a woman who's not trying to be something that everybody else is trying to be. I love a woman who knows who she is, loves her curves, loves her fat, loves her skinniness, loves her rolls, loves her ass, loves her hips, loves whatever God blessed her with. Because for me, I'm just attracted to confidence. And I really shy away from, the opposite of, well, we all have insecurities, but just women who, or people who live in their insecurities and don't know who they are. I think that's a big problem in today's time.
What is the qualities that you would look for in a woman?
Qualities? You know what? I love a woman that I love confidence. I love confidence and simplicity. I love confidence in being able to dress up. I love confidence in the homie lover friend, where we could just sit up and laugh and crack jokes all night and just be regular. No makeup, makeup free zone. You're still pretty as ever. I'm the kind of dude that'll just wake up and stare at your ass. You know what I'm saying? That's who I am.
Wow.
Straight up. That's how I get down. Like, you ain't got to get dressed up for me to be impressed. We're going to keep it natural. You know what I'm saying? I love a whole food woman that's all natural and organic with it. Come on, Jesus!
What's your favorite thing about a woman? What attracts you to a woman?
I really like a woman who keeps herself together. You know, like hair, nails, jewelry, all that. Kind of like you, you know? But yeah, just like that, taking that effort to look good is a real turn on for me.
She's got to have hygiene. You know, she's got to bathe, basically.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, at least. At the very least.
I think it's the small things, you know, confidence. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the woman that can use little to no makeup when she first jumps out of bed, you know what I mean? Like, it's her walk. It's her swagger. You know, it's her persona. You know, this thing you can't really formulate into words.
What qualities are you looking for in a woman?
Honesty. I love a great imagination, and you know, pure beauty. I mean, just knowing your worth.
I like a woman that's confident in herself. I also like a woman that's likes to go out of her way to please her man, because that makes you want to try even that much harder to outdo her and please her, you know?
Eva is lucky. Eva, girl, I'm hating Eva. Dang. I'm Sharice Nicole. Thanks for watching Coco Fab TV. And remember, to know what's good in Hollywood, you got to see Nikki.
All right, man, we're back. Now, we're going to get into another part of this thing that we're dealing with here this evening on these contracts, and that is nationality. What is your nationality? What is your nationality? I mean, in my opinion, that is a fair question.
The root word of nationality is nation, and nation is a Latin word which means race. We know for certain that America is a continent. America is not a nation, so therefore it cannot be a person's nationality. Shalom, I'm Judah Israel, and today what I'm going to do is discuss nationalities. In one of my previous videos titled, Negroes Are Not of African Descent, I already touched bases on nationality, but today I'm going to go into a little more detail, that way we can get a clear understanding on what it means to have a nationality, because many people in the so-called black community is not really aware of what it means to have a nationality. So therefore, we are going to touch bases on nationality. And now that we're on the subject, I'm going to ask you, once again, what is your nationality? And I want you to really think about it. I'm going to ask you again, what is your nationality? The root word of nationality is nation. And nation is a Latin word which means race. We know for certain that America is a continent. America is not a nation, so therefore it cannot be a person's nationality. America is also split into three parts, North, Central, and South. There are many races of people in America. Which nation of people are you claiming to be a part of? The word America comes from an Italian explorer by the name of Amerigo Vespucci. We're not Italians either. Do you speak American? Does anybody in America speak American? Of course not. You clearly speak English. You speak English very well, might I add. And English comes from England, not America. So that would mean that your ancestors had to have been speaking something else originally. Because one thing's for certain, we don't come from England, the last time I checked. We know everyone else's language and land, etc. For instance, Russians are from Russia. They speak Russian. Germans are from Germany, and they speak German. Koreans are from Korea. They speak Korean. Spanish people are from Spain. They speak Spanish. Chinese people are from China. They speak Chinese. Japanese people are from Japan, and they speak Japanese. French people are from France, and they speak French. Vietnamese people are from Vietnam, and they speak Vietnamese. So why is it that we're the only people who cannot point out our original land, language? We don't know our culture and our heritage. Why do we know everyone else's heritage but our own? Why are we the only people that are named after a color of a crayon, black, or named after a continent, American, or two continents? African, American. These are not nationalities. These are colors of a crayon and continent. Why is it that we know everything else, but all of a sudden are so short-term memory when asked who we are? Africa, America are two continents. That is not a nation of people. Why is it that Africans can tell you their nationality? They will not say that they're African or African-American. They will say that they're Ethiopian, they're Kenyan, they're Nigerian, they're Egyptian, they are Libyan. They can tell you exactly where they are from. They can tell you their nationality. When a person asks you, what is your nationality? Once again, you give them two continents. So, African American, what part of Africa are you from? Where is home for you in Africa? Which part of Africa is claiming you? And most importantly, what part can you go to in this African land and say, this is your homeland? And people will accept you and acknowledge you and say, hey, this person is from Africa. What is the original language for Africa, America? Is it African language? Well, what language is that? Nobody in Africa speaks a language called African. Is it American language? Once again, who in America speaks American? Is that a language? No. Do you speak Americanese? Absolutely not. So what is your nationality? Because there's no way that you can have ancestors that was brought here on slave ships and be two continents at the same time. So once again, what language do you speak? Afro-American? Of course not. When someone asks you, what is your nationality? More than likely, you'll give them the color of a crayon, black. If black is your nationality, then where at on the map can I find black land? What language is black language? What is the heritage of black? What is black culture? Is it BET, Black Entertainment Television? Now, there are many races of blacks, such as Haitians, Jamaicans, Ethiopians, Nigerians, Egyptians, even Negroes. So what nation of blacks are you claiming? And which black nation is claiming you? Remember, Ethiopians and Nigerians are black like you. And they have a nationality. So what is yours? So keep in mind, when someone asks you what is your nationality and you give them these bywords and proverbs, which is not an identity, how can you claim that as being your true identity? What is your nationality? Can you tell me? Even dogs have a better identity than the so-called Negro. For instance, a German Shepherd is from where? Germany. A French Bulldog is from where? France. Italian Greyhounds are from where? Italy. Japanese Shin is from where? Japan. I'm sure you can also think of other dogs that also have a better identity than the so-called Negro. So who are you, Negro? What is your heritage? Did you know that your heritage was discontinued from you? Why don't you go into the book of Jeremiah, chapter 17, verse 4, and read that. And you sit and think to yourself, what does that scripture mean to you? In the near future, I will be back with more details on who we are told we are. I'm Judah Israel. Shalom.
Okay, now let's take nationality and let's versus law. We have people inside the United States of African descent whose nationality doesn't appear on documents that they are asked to sign when the word race appears up top. I have looked at quite a few of these documents, and it has, it says white, it says Native American, it says black or African American, and then there's no space for you to straighten it out. There's no box for you to write in your nationality on that contract so it can be enforced. And so therefore we have a situation where we have to check somebody else's definition of their reality of who they say that you are. And so it may be a good idea to figure out where you can write it in, if you'd ask for a sheet of paper where you can write it out and attach it to the document that you're giving them so that they can clearly understand that you know who you are. My nationality is Moorish. Okay, I met a gentleman yesterday from Bangladesh, and he asked me, well, what is your nationality? I said, Moorish. Moorish, you say, Moorish, I don't know. And I said, well, the society that you're in today is make sure that that's not listed on any documentation. It's not broadcasted on the media. And if it is, it's always attacked and presented as if it's something that should not be taken seriously. But the UN is already, the United Nations has already declared that no one should be deprived of a nationality. So if we can get to settling the question about nationality, then you have one. You don't need anybody else to recognize you as a Moor. Me personally, I don't. You know, whether I'm wearing my face or not, I'm Moorish. Okay, so if you have a problem with that, you insist on me being black, Negro, or color, then you and I can deal with that. I conditionally accept your offer on the proof of claim and liability and make sure you have all the documentation you're going to need that you're going to have. And it wouldn't be a bad idea if you go get the Pope, too, because you're going to need him. But anyway, your nationality is important. And so if you are getting a driver's license, if you're going to fill out the paperwork for a driver's license and it's got a box over there for you to check about your race, and you don't see your nationality there, you might want to ask some questions. you might want to see if we can get that put there so that we can check it, and we can supply you with information involving that so you will automatically know that we're not your property. And so if you would consider that and think about that for a minute, and keep in mind that the United States does not interfere with your right to make contract. Okay, we operate under contract law. And we're signing all of these contracts. We're signing it. We're checking the boxes. Black, Afro-American, African-American, and all this right here. But we're not making it clear that this someone has made a mistake, that we should get straightened out immediately. Otherwise, we might have a lawsuit. And that way they could can provide proof of claim that there is a nation or a nationality called Negro, colored, or black, or African, or American, and all of that stuff, you see. So you might want to pay close attention to a lot of the contracts that you put your signature on, or that you're trying to get involved with. Just look over it. Take your time to read it. We're supposed to be reading these contracts anyway. Any contract that you get, you're supposed to be examining the contract. Okay? I mean, that's, you know, when I see it, because I haven't seen it in a while because I haven't been dealing with it, but if I see it, then I have to confront that situation. I cannot tell you a lie. I cannot check the box and lie to you. I mean, you're depending on me for honesty, so the least I can do is give you honesty. You know, I have to do that. I don't have any choice in dealing with that unless I deal with that from that position. Okay, let's take a little look at something else that's going on Saturday night.
I'd like to address a topic that I get a lot of questions about. The topic is why black men date or marry white women, or date or marry white women exclusively. I've also seen this a lot on the internet, and it's troubling. If you ask black women, you'll hear many black women say, well, black men hate black women. And if you've heard some of the things I heard on YouTube and on the internet, you would be hard-pressed to prove these women wrong. Some of the things that a lot of these black men say are atrocious about black women, but I don't think that this is why black men date white women. I think that it starts in the home. I think that most people know that black women raise black sons. They raise black men. And I don't think it's the question of, well, women can't raise men, or it takes a man to raise a man. I think that that's ridiculous. I think it's ludicrous. And I think black women have been raising black men long enough that it's and women have been raising men long enough that it's flat out false and a lie to say that women can't raise men. But I think the issue is that in our communities, we have lower economic status. We have very depressed communities. And when you live in a depressed community and your mother is the person who is raising you, you start to see that woman as struggle. And I think black men have started to see black women, and have for a long time seen black women as struggle. Not as bad people, but as people who intrinsically have to struggle. Because, let's face it, everything is not paid for. Everything is not there. And so when you see your mother and your sister and your grandmother and your aunt struggle, that's who you associate with struggle, particularly when you watch television and you see white faces doing well and flourishing, and you see your primary caregiver is having to have two and three jobs to pay the bills. That's struggle. A lot of black men say that they have bad attitudes, but I think that if you would have to struggle, you might, if it's true that black women have bad attitudes, you might have a bad attitude too if you have to have three jobs to pay the bill and you have to deal with racism and you have to deal with sexism. You might have a bad attitude too. I think the second problem is that in our communities, we don't have a high degree of self-love. I'd say we have a low degree of self-love. We idealize whiteness, and what we really idealize is non-blackness. And so we love straight hair, long hair. We love white-type hair, if it could be called that, but straight hair, certainly, because most people have straight hair, or at least so it seems. I don't know if that's actually true. But we like straight hair. We like light eyes, we like light skin, we don't like big noses, we like all the things that are not natural to us and are natural to other people. That is rough, and so when you're raised thinking that what you look like is not sufficient, and that the people who look like you are a constant source of struggle, they have to constantly struggle, you're going to want to survive by not engaging in relationships with those people. And I don't think that everybody thinks it out, but I think that this is how it happens. You engage in relationships with people who are other than struggle, who are other than what you consider to be ugly. Now, I don't think that black women are ugly. I have beautiful black sisters. My mother is black. I don't think, and my aunt, you know what I mean? Like, I think black women are beautiful. But I think that our community says that we're not beautiful. I mean, I had a hard time being a dark-skinned boy, and it was really difficult. And we don't value that. And so this problem comes out of this value, which is whiteness, or at least which is being phenotypically white. And so the question arises, I think, well, what should black women do in situations like this? You know, I don't know what to do. I think that our community really just needs self-love. It's hard to love somebody who doesn't love themselves. And when you have a history like ours is, whether you're an African person from the continent of Africa, or an African person from around the diaspora, it's hard to love yourself when everything says not to love yourself. And so when we see this sort of attrition of black men not wanting to date black women, and I don't think that that's a majority, by the way, I think it speaks to economic status. I think it speaks to internalized racism, and I think that that's the problem. I'd like to say to go into this question of black women have bad attitudes. I don't think that this is the case. I think that you can find loads of women who have bad attitudes, regardless of their race or ethnicity. I think you can find loads of women who have bad attitudes. So I don't think it's attitudes. I think that that's an excuse. That's definitely an excuse. But I think that you might start making excuses when you feel like the decision that you made is is going to be a hard-fought decision. And I think that it's a hard-fought decision is not necessarily bad, because I think that if you can start thinking about it and you can start thinking about these things, you can come better off. And so we're at a point where we've actually got to start making decisions about these things. We've got to start thinking about these things, and we've got to start talking about these things. And we've got to start talking about the love in our communities. Black men don't date white women or marry white women exclusively because black women are bad. They oftentimes say it. They cite that as a reason, but that's not true. We date it because black men date white women because there's a high degree of suffering in our community. And that suffering is economic, and it turns into a lot of social oppressions. And those are the things that as a community, we've got to sort of legislate on, and we've got to decide as different directions, or there's going to be no end to this sort of attrition. Now, I'm not against, clearly, I'm not against interracial dating or marriage or anything else like that, but what I am against is the sort of self-loathing and the backfighting that we have in our community, and these images are the images that force, but they easily persuade people who are trying to survive away from these things. I mean, like when you talk about evolution, you talk about isolation of gene pools and finding the right equipment to survive. And so right now, black men, many black men, not all black men, think that the right equipment is the white equipment. And that's a fact. And I don't think that that's true. I think that the right equipment is whoever is best for you. And I think that that's something we're missing. And I don't think that we can, that those can be healthy choices when we have such sort of self-loathing in our communities. And it's not the fault of black women. And it's not the fault of black men. But what is our fault is that we haven't been able to sort of look at ourselves, and we haven't been able to come up with something which sort of alleviates these things. But the last thing I want to talk about is stress. In our communities, we have great amounts of stress. And so when we talk about the attitudes of black women, if these are true, it's because of stress. And black women have the same attitudes that black men have, because we are highly stressed. We need to take moments to relieve our stress. We need to find things to sort of relieve our stress and to look at ourselves. Because I think that when you have all this sort of stress, it's easy to be self-deprecating. It's easy to sort of cling to things that are superficial, like skin color and hair color and things like that, and not sort of look inward and at what's good. So we need to find avenues to deal with our stress and manage our stress. Because I think that when you have children, children pick up on those stressors. This is what I'm talking about, black men leaving sort of our communities and things like that, because we pick up on these stressors and we say we don't want that for ourselves. And so I think we need to find ways of alleviating our stress along with sort of finding self-love. But I think that this is part of finding self-love, is finding ways to sort of de-stress and think about things. Stress is the reason our children don't always do well in school. It's because they can't think about things when they have so many problems and the home life is so tumultuous. When you have people who have to constantly lock up their doors with 10 bolts running up the doors, when they have to hide everything, when the houses get broken in and people steal everything, they have to worry about gunshots. Stress is going to happen, but we've got to find ways to escape those things. And I'm not talking about escapism like drugs. I'm talking about we have to find ways to relax, because our children pick up on this, and these are the sort of things that affect our young men, and they affect our young women negatively. And so if we want to talk about the attitudes of black women and the attitudes of black men, well, they come from our stresses, and I'm not saying that we're the cause of our stress, but we do have to find ways to de-stress, because I think we're in a tough time right now. I think that we're in a very tough time right now. And that there's this back and forth about whether black men are faithful to the community and that there's love in the community is just a product of those stressors. And I think that if we can find ways to alleviate the tape cut off. But I was saying that we need to find ways to alleviate our stress, because these are the things that are eventually going to allow us to see ourselves more humanly and more righteously and in a healthier fashion. And this is the kind of thing that will stop the sort of back and forth bickering and the derision in our communities. And so I'm going to sum it up by saying what I said in the beginning. Why black men date and marry white women exclusively is because black men don't want the stress, no more than black women want the stress. Black men associate black women with struggle, and they associate blackness with something that's undesirable, because that's what our community says. Now, I don't believe that black women are struggle. I don't believe that our communities are filled with people who are not attractive or anything else like that. But I think that changing these mindsets will sort of change the dynamics of relationships in our communities.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-A-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and of course B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
Okay, Morris, we're back. I'll make a little minor correction there. If you own Facebook, Facebook has said, okay, reached his 5,000 friend limit, so he can't add him on friends. So send a friend request to Amana L. Bay on LinkedIn. That's A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and then B-E-Y. That's Amana L. Bay, A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and then B-E-Y. On LinkedIn, on Facebook, send your friend request to Amana Bay, A-M-A-A-N-A, and then B-E-Y. Amana Bay on Facebook, and we'll grant you friendship. That way you have access to the information that we provide there for you, and you'll be able to join the groups and stuff that is still available for you to join and continue to get the information that you get. Okay? Now, I wanted to run that plug there that we just dealt with about the brother's, his opinion on us dating outside of a race, okay? Now, that's all a part of our reality. And what I'm trying to get us to focus on is to control our consciousness and to start seeing things and defining our own reality for ourselves. You cannot no longer afford to allow someone else to define your reality. You can't do that. You have to do that. I remember once in I was in the court, and the judge, he told me, he said, well, he made a statement that you owe us some money for child support and stuff. I said, I don't owe you nothing, a judge. And I said, as a matter of fact, I ain't going to let you give me nothing. And he got mad. But he didn't, you know, he didn't get up, you know, to come out face-to-face, man-to-man. So I stood there. He sat there. And he said, well, I say you owe child support. And I told him, I said, well, I'm not gonna give you any money, man. I ain't giving you no money. And then later, they sent a notice about some child support. I didn't know anything about law, but and I ignored it. Never did send him anything. And eventually, for some reason, I don't know what happened, he didn't. They didn't come back with me about it. They had me downtown in the jail once, and they mentioned it. And I told them, I said, well, I'm not going to give you any money for that. Whatever you want to do about that, you go ahead and do it. And I'll deal with it when I get out. And but anyway, he was trying to, in my opinion, define my reality. Because in the first place, I take care of my own children. I brought them in the world. These are my children. This is not your property. It belongs to me. Now, if you think it's your property, then take it. And this is my move. And I don't want you to think that I'm being aggressive or violent or evil or wicked or anything like that. The only thing I know is I just control my own consciousness. I have defined my own reality. You know, I live in a reality that I'm familiar with and always have been. And I studied the teachings of my own people. The authors, the majority of the books that I read are written by authors that look like me. The information they put out, I verified just like I would do anybody else's own, and I find that facts are facts. So why would I allow somebody else to define my reality for me? I can't do that. I haven't done that. When I find something new, something that I don't understand, then I'll investigate it and find out whether it's good or evil. And if it's evil, then it's something that I don't need. You know, why would I accept something, because you have to look at reality in the face of reality. Okay, we are people. Our forefathers were murdered, they were burned, they were lynched, they were castrated. I was talking to a friend of mine down south, and he's originally from Carolina. And his mama, he told me his mama slapped the police so hard to leave his handprint across his face in his part of the Ku Klux Klan. And the Klan, they gathered up all their men and came down there where they was. By the time they got there, they had about 50 men standing there with guns in their hands. And they told them, a Klan is your move, soldier. All you got to do is make a move. We'll do the rest. And it never went anywhere. Nobody fired a shot. That was the end of the story. And so my question to people of African descent is, when are you going to start taking total control of the brain that's inside the skull that sits on top of your shoulders? When are you going to start defining your reality? When are you going to control what goes on in the brain, what happens to the brain, what's presented to the brain, your environment, what you're looking at, what you're hearing? When are you going to start doing that and developing the strength and skills and techniques and stuff that you need in the brain, and then putting these things into motion and practicing? Because if you practice, if you are skilled, then you discover that the fear that a lot of people have, you just simply don't have. The only position that I can speak from is a position that's indoctrinated in my brain. That's supposed to be there. If I'm a Chinese, I'm supposed to know everything about my culture. And so why is it that there's a problem when people of African descent attempt to do the same thing? People from Mexico, They have a Mexican consciousness. People, Cuban consciousness. They have their nationality, their culture, their story. But why is it wrong and evil and wicked for me, a man of African descent, born inside the United States, it's wrong for me to have a consciousness of my own that's indoctrinated and anchored in my culture, in my ancient story? Why? I don't understand that. You know, everybody else, the Cubans, you got Puerto Ricans, you got all these different people from all these nationalities that have their culture and the things they do indoctrinated in them. But when it comes to me, Negro, colored, and black, then we ain't got no business with that. You You'll be what we call you. You'll be what we say you are, and you'll do how we say we do. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, soldier. We got a problem. But anyway, we're coming to the close of the broadcast. I have been your host this evening to Haga Manuel Bay, and y'all stay tuned for tomorrow's night wealth building class. We're going to be on doing our wealth building class tomorrow night at 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The number to dial is 712-432-3100. That's 712-432-3100. The access code is 865074. That's 865074. Tomorrow night, 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that's when we host our wealth building class. Keep in mind, we will be in Atlanta for our Morris Summit, so make sure that you get information on that. I'm waiting on the guy to send me the flyer so I can put this information out involving that. And also, once again, tune into the African History Network show. There's a ton of information that Brother Imhotep is putting out, and there are quite a few others. Brother Yusuf Yael, he has a fantastic broadcast that goes on in the morning, so make sure you catch that in the morning. And I've been your host, Tahaka Amani LB, and until next time, you all have a good evening, okay?